I was born in 1960, and even in my lifetime, we've seen a love affair with a car go to a lot of people that are in their 20s don't even own cars and don't want to own it. You know, I can barely remember when the train would run and, you know, we'd go down to pick up my grain on at the train station when she'd come to town for a visit. You know, I think there are a lot of people that would love to ride the trains, but it's not even an option.
Well, maybe like you, I love taking the train. I grew up in a railroading family, though. My dad worked for the Boston Main Railroad. He worked in industrial real estate, and he would sell off their vast holdings in real estate to keep the railroads running. One thing he did for me, I always appreciate, he got me summer jobs, 6 summers in a row, working on the tracks as a Gandy dancer on the Boston and Maine Railroad in the desperate heat of the summers outside of Boston. It was a miserable job, but it paid really well, and I was able to pay my way through college. But that was my railroading story for the longest time, and it's only now, at this present chapter in my life, where I am once again riding the rails, this time with my bicycle. Would you take your bike on the train if it was easier to do so? That's what we're going to talk about today. My name is Frank Peters. One of my guests today, Champ Burnley, you just heard him chiming in, joined by a couple of other guests, and they're going to introduce themselves in just a minute. Today, it's all about Amtrak, taking your bike, a little multimodal travel. Let's listen.
Dave, would you start us off and introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, sure. I'm Dave Snyder. Good morning, Frank. I'm the executive director of the California Bicycle Coalition based in Sacramento, California. We work to coordinate and unite the 14 different bicycle advocacy organizations around the state.
Wow, 14, huh? And Dave, while you're starting us off here this morning, you want to give the summit a quick plug?
Yeah, sure. Well, the weekend of November 7th through the 10th in Oakland, California, we'll have about 180 to 200 people, leaders in advocacy, in industry, in technology, in health, together to talk about what we are doing in our communities and what more we can do to get to our goal of doubling cycling in California by 2017.
Very good. I'll be there, Dave. I'm very
All right.
excited about
I'm glad you're going to come, and hopefully we can work on Amtrak there.
Oh, great, great. Kerry Irons, say hello, please.
Yeah, this is Kerry Irons with the Adventure Cycling Association, working on bikes on Amtrak and the U.S. Bicycle Route System.
Now, the Adventure Cycling Association, I had little trouble signing up to be a member of that once I found it, Kerry. A lot of great stories coming out of ACA, huh?
Yeah, and by the way, we don't call ourselves ACA. I don't know why, but we don't.
You always go longhand, huh?
Yeah.
All right, very good. And Champ Burnley, say hello, please.
Hello, Frank. Good morning. It's great to be with you. I'm Champ Burnley, president of the Virginia Bicycling Federation. We often go by the shorthand VBF. We're the statewide advocacy organization, obviously, in Virginia, and work with organizations like Kerry's and others to make bicycling better in Virginia. And we work on things like long-distance route. We've got our hand in the Amtrak project and just do what we can to make the world a better place to cycle.
Mm-hmm. And Champ, you and I met just this spring, I think, at the National Bike Summit in Washington, D.C. We have a common friend in Matt O'Toole.
Yeah, Matt is my secret weapon. He's our communications director. For years, Matt was the our guy putting together our website, running our Twitter, and getting the word out on social media. And ironically, he lived in Newport Beach. He was from he lived in Virginia for many years, and I guess about a year ago he moved back to the East Coast. We're great to have him back.
I bet you are, because yeah, Matt is a website guru, and while he was in Newport Beach, he helped me more than one occasion to bail me out of trouble when I paint myself into a corner on the website. So, thanks for that introduction, Matt. Well, gentlemen, we're gathered this morning. Dave started this kind of a theme. Maybe 10 days ago, Dave invited me to pen a little article for a newsletter he was putting together on Amtrak experiences. And Dave, what were your thoughts there? You've got something up your sleeve. You had a method to your madness. Where are you going with your Amtrak advocacy?
Yeah, you might be overstating it a little bit. I think there's a lot we can do to make transit, long distance transit and commuter transit, work a lot better. I was inspired by trips that I've taken to Amsterdam and elsewhere in Europe with the role that trains play in their transportation system, and especially that the bike and train combination together plays in their transportation system. And also, I'm inspired by touring, and I'm glad Carrie's here, the opportunity to go on long-distance car-free tours with the combination of your bike and Amtrak is just incredible. So it's a huge potential, but it's going to be hard for Amtrak to accommodate it. Hard, but not impossible, and that's our job to make it work.
What's it like in the Sacramento area, Dave, where you're located?
Well, I think we got it better off, and you got it down there. The Capital Corridor is managed by BART. BART is run by an elected board of directors, at least three of whom are everyday regular bicyclists, including two executive directors of organizations that advocate for bicyclists, including Robert Rayburn, the former director of the East Bay Bicycle Coalition. So they make sure that the Capital Corridor serves bicyclists well, and they have torn out seats on short notice. Their conductors are on notice to not turn away bicyclists, to be very lenient in enforcement of the rules, and as long as a bike is out of the way of the aisle, you can stash it anywhere.
Wow.
So there will be as many as 30, 40, 50 bikes on a train between Berkeley and Davis, two big university towns. I take my bike on that train. It can be a real pain, though. It can get really crowded, and I'd rather not, to be honest. And I told the station manager and the members of the board that. I say, look, I'm one of these people who brings my bike on your train, taking a space from someone, and I don't even want to do that. I only do that because you don't leave me a decent place to keep a bike parked in Sacramento. If I had a place to keep a bike in Sacramento, I would walk onto the train, walk off, and grab my bike from the locker in Sacramento, and they haven't bothered to do that. And so until they do that, we would fight long and hard here against a system like a reservation system or a fee system that would restrict our access because they are not giving us any alternative.
Mm-hmm. So, Dave, you say you'd lock up your bike, you'd prefer a locker in the Sacramento train station, then you get to San Francisco, and what would you do then?
Well, I go between Oakland and Sacramento.
Okay.
My office happens to be real close to the Amtrak station here, so I can walk to the Amtrak station here in Oakland, and I would leave the bike in Sacramento. And I would leave it sometimes for days at a time, and so I can't just leave it out in a regular rack. It needs a secure spot.
Right.
Well, yeah, they have a question for you. The official Amtrak timetable shows six bikes per car, or six bikes per train, rather, on that Capital Corridor. That doesn't sound like that number is too meaningful.
No. In fact, you must be looking at an old one because there's way more than that.
Is it six bikes per car, maybe?
Some cars have room for three bikes. Some cars have room for 12 to 15 to 18 bikes, something like that.
Okay, I'm just pulling this from the Amtrak timetable, so who knows what. But.
Yeah, CapitalCorridor.org is the agency that runs that. Amtrak seems to have very little to do with it, to be honest.
Carrie, go ahead, Champ.
I was going to say, I wish we had six. Here in Virginia, the only way you get a bike on an Amtrak is to actually box it up. So I tell you what, you guys are way ahead of us on the East Coast.
So boxing it up on, to just say that doesn't sound that hard, but do you box up your bike?
Take off the handlebars, yeah.
Yeah, take off the pedals. I mean, certainly, especially if you've ever taken a bike on an airplane, you know, it's not a terribly difficult task, but you know, if you're wearing a coat and tie and heading to a meeting, you really don't feel like pulling out a wrench. On top of that, you've got to get a box for both ways. And when you do that, at least with Amtrak, it's going to set you back probably $40, $50 to the added expense of your trip. So, for example, if I want to go to D.C. and wanted to take my bike up for the weekend, I think I can get a ticket from Richmond to D.C. round trip for about $50, $53. And to box my bike up, ship it, and bring it back is going to cost $40. Boy, it'd be so much nicer if I could just roll it onto a train and take it along with me.
For me, the boxing it up idea is just like a non-starter. It just, I don't know. I guess the whole idea intimidates me. Or bringing the pedal wrench is...
It's a deal breaker for a lot of people.
It's a deal breaker. You're right, Kerry. Yeah.
The standard practice for Amtrak, just to put that $40 into perspective, is... It's $10 for the bike, or for the box, if you will, and it's $10 to buy the box. So you ride your bike to the Amtrak station, you buy the box, you put your bike in the box. There's $20. You go up to your destination. Obviously, unless you have a magic place to store the box goes in the trash, and then when you come back, you buy another box and you put your bike in the box. So there's $10 and $10 for the baggage charge, and so there's your $40.
Mm-hmm. So Kerry, I'm glad you're on here, because in Virginia, and I think in most of the country, you're dealing with Amtrak, the national organization. In some parts of the country, you're dealing with a local joint powers board or some kind of local authority. I think down in Southern California, you have a joint powers board that runs the Surfliner.
The reality of that, as I understand it, and here's a data point for you. I'll come back to this in a second. The reality of that is that Caltrans runs the Amtrak trains in California.
Okay.
And there might be a local advisory board. And obviously, there's in California in particular, there's a number of subsets. There's BART and these sorts of things. But the Capital Corridor is listed in the Amtrak timetable as an Amtrak train. But it's really run by Caltrans.
Yeah, it's run. The Capital Corridor is run by. Technically, it's run by BART. Caltrans owns the rolling stock. The operation is done by BART. Caltrans runs the San Joaquin and the Surfliner. So it's not a joint powers board. It's Caltrans that operates the Surfliner.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
This is fairly complicated across the country in different places. But as of the first of next month, basically all the short haul lines, so anything under 750, the responsibility is going to the states.
Oh,
so this is This is a big shakeup at Amtrak, and one of the reasons I think, Champ, I just learned this the other day. So one of the reasons maybe we aren't getting much response from them when we try to contact them is they are totally laser focused on this October 1st. And you know it's not gonna just fall out of the sky for them. It's going to be a lot of work, and it's probably going to be at least by the end of the year that before they even have it fully functioning. So there's going to be a big transition as all these shorter haul runs under 750 miles become state responsibility.
Yeah, and I think even currently with Amtrak, as I understand it, again, it's really complex stuff. But the passenger rail is subsidized in the state. And on Tesla, we've got the usual Amtrak lines, and I know the state's just put money in here in Virginia to extend passenger rail down through Lynchburg to Roanoke, which we're excited about. But at the same time, you have lines like the Virginia Rail Express, which go from Fredericksburg up to D.C. And, you know, I get about a call a month from people asking, you know, why in the world can't I carry my bike along and use it for the last mile? And again, it just is, as you all just reiterated, doing the box thing is a real deal breaker, and a lot of people just aren't going to do it.
And actually, Dave also highlighted a really important point about reservations and fees and stuff like that. You know, if you're gonna think like an adventure cycling member, okay, I wanna maybe take the train to the Cascades and ride back. You know, who knows how far east, or I wanna finish my ride in the middle of the country and take the train home, you really don't have a problem with getting a reservation and paying a fee. You're thinking about it like an airplane trip. But if you're a daily commuter, that really gets in the way. And I know that there was a proposal to put a fee in place for the Southern California line, the Surfliner. And it wasn't too bad if you were going out for a weekend, you know, 10, 20 bucks for a weekend trip. You know, that's not too bad. 20 bucks a day as a commuter, $100 a week. So there's complexities there in how you want to do that.
So they backpedaled on that pretty quickly, Kerry.
Yeah, because of the feedback. I mean, you can't attribute to malice what can be so easily explained by incompetence. So I just don't think they thought that through before they proposed it.
Sure.
Well, and I tell you, Kerry, that's one of my frustrations is just the inconsistencies. You know, if you've been fortunate enough to travel around Europe, putting a bike on a train is just a non-issue. Nobody even thinks twice about it.
Right.
Yet here in North Carolina, for example,
it's a moon launch.
Service
it's
from,
a moon
I believe,
launch.
Raleigh to Charlotte. They have bike racks. It's free. You put your bike on. It's no big deal. I know, Kerry, you all have done some great work up in Michigan, and you've gotten some bike racks up there. The VBF has approached Amtrak for, I guess, 3 years now about finding a solution. And their answer is, the only way we can do this is to buy brand new baggage cars that are specially equipped for bicycles. And, of course, the state has to pay for that. Well, we've got people that just want basic service, like I mentioned, the extension down to Roanoke. So spending a couple $100,000 for a new baggage car is not a priority. And, you know, I guess that's my frustration. It's not even as if the left hand isn't talking to the right hand. It's like the five fingers aren't even communicating with each other.
Sure.
And I just don't understand why this is such a difficult problem.
Yeah, well, first of all, Champ, that's bullshit. They don't have to buy new cars. They can just retrofit their existing ones without too much trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, and that's the opportunity that we face.
Kerry, is there any chance for a national standard or any kind of leadership from Amtrak, or are we looking at a state-by-state fight because of the new policy?
That's an open question. We're working hard to get a national connection with Amtrak, but even then, with the new structure, it'll come back to say, well, the states are in control of these lines, and we're in control of those lines, and so we'll have to sort that out. So I think it's going to have to be a combination of national-level action and state-level action, and that's frustrating on the one hand, but at the same time, some states are making progress, and that maybe wouldn't have happened if it had been completely up to Amtrak. So we take them as we get them and move forward.
But you know, that said, Kerry, and that's what I would like to see is a first step with Amtrak. I believe the folks up in New York just got some service, but I think it took Amtrak a year to determine what the suitable standard was for a bike rack. You know, this is not rocket science. Let's figure out, hey, here are a couple of approved bike racks that we can bolt into a baggage car and be done with it and not turn this into such an ordeal. But let's come up with standards that are suitable, that Amtrak's comfortable with. If we need to go to the states and get some funding to do it, you know, I think that's reasonable. But coming back and saying, well, we need these brand new, you know, baggage cars that are specially equipped. I mean, that's over the top.
I've seen those baggage cars that are made for bicycles here in Southern California. Metrolink has got a few of them, and they're running them on the local, let's say, between Oceanside and San Diego County in Los Angeles. And they're beautifully, painted with the bicycle logo all over it. They're really something, but I'm kind of getting the feeling that, of course, who doesn't like to buy new equipment, right? And that's what is happening locally here anyway.
It's a little bit the equivalent of saying, oh, you want a bike rack? Well, you got to buy a new car.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
When we all know you don't have to do that.
Now, how about, Champ, you mentioned funding, and that triggers a thought. What I see in the newspapers are Congress constantly chipping away at Amtrak. It takes money to provide the level of service that we are all dreaming of here, and it doesn't seem like they're getting it. What's going on there?
You're absolutely right, Frank, and I think that's we're a bit of a chicken and egg scenario. Let's face it, the U.S. transportation system is undergoing a major transformation. You know, I was born in 1960, and even in my lifetime, we've seen a love affair with a car go to a lot of people that are in their 20s don't even own cars and don't want to own it. You know, I can barely remember when the train would run and, you know, we'd go down to pick up my grain on at the train station when she'd come to town for a visit. You know, I think there are a lot of people that would love to ride the trains, but it's not even an option. If you attract customers, especially choice customers, you know, a good example, I was just on vacation with nine friends. We went up and rode the Erie Canal Trail. So we've got 10 folks. I've got an Amtrak station 2 miles from my house, and there's service to Buffalo. But there was no convenient way for us to take our bikes and our gear and go up there. So instead, you know, we rented vans, we dropped them off.
Oh, what a
shame. We rode up to Albany. It was just a major hassle. You know, if you attract people, and we don't have to start out with brand new rail cars, start out with a couple of racks, and I think Amtrak will find, you know what, we're getting marginally more passengers, and at some point we may put in a couple of you know, big cars on popular routes. I think about the Capital Crescent Corridor that goes from D.C. up to Chicago. You know, you're paralleling places like Harper's Ferry and the C&O Canal, the Great Allegheny Passage. I bet if we had a dedicated car on there, they could fill that up every weekend with dozens, if not hundreds, yeah, of cyclists that would love to use that to go from D.C. to Pittsburgh.
Champ, there's evidence of that too. I haven't mentioned Caltrain yet. Caltrain is the commuter rail that runs between San Jose and San Francisco. And over the last 10 years, they've experienced fantastic ridership growth, contrary to the national trend. And it's because about 1 in 8 of their customers, almost 1 in 8, come by bike. They have constantly been increasing the capacity. They have either 32 or 64 bikes per train allowed.
Wow.
They took out in one of the and at least one car on every train. It's a kind of a double decker where the bottom deck has 4 seats and the top deck has 2. In the bottom deck, they took out half of the seats and they replaced them with 8 racks. Each rack can fit 4 bikes. You just kind of stack the bikes up on top of each other. So it's nothing fancy, but it's very efficient. And the conductors will go into that car and they'll say, is anyone in this car who does not have a bicycle? Please find another car. This car is reserved for passengers with their bicycles. It's fantastic.
Oh, wow. That sounds great.
And do it because there's money in it.
Yeah, Dave, if you get a chance, Google VA Bike and Amtrak. We did an article 2 years ago about this whole issue, and I found an old video from the Cycle Tourist Club in England.
They would have these weekends. 1955, right?
Exactly right.
For any of the
viewers that haven't seen it, it shows some of the tourists from back in 1955, and I guess they would go out on a weekend excursion and have an entire boxcar dedicated to bikes. And they had a real simple arrangement. They've got hooks up in the ceiling. You hand your bike up to the conductor or the baggage man, and he would hang the bike up, and they would fill the train up. Look, back to your point, Frank, again, it's a classic example, I think, of build it and they will come. And I guess that's what I find very frustrating about this. I mean, my background is in technology sales. When you see a market opportunity, boy, go after it full speed. And it's almost like we have to get Amtrak to do this kicking and screaming. And what I can't figure out, you look at the Cascade Line up in Oregon and Washington State. They've just expanded the service because it's so popular. You see it work in California. Yet on the East Coast, it seems like we just find reason after reason not to do this. Build it and they will come. And I think we'll all be pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And that highlights an opportunity that goes beyond the kind of the daily train schedule, and that is excursions. So this is what this Cycle Tourist Club thing in 1955 in England was about. Is they worked with Brit Rail and said, hey, we need a bike car on the weekend. So on a Saturday, on a Sunday, 30, 40, 50 cyclists would roll up to the train station, roll their bikes onto the rail car, just like Champ described. So it's reminiscent of the old ski trains that used to run up the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
And the exact same idea that either just as, hey, we're running, you know, it's peeper season in Vermont, we'll take you up there, or whatever the event might be, whatever the weekend might be, or maybe just the weekends, we'll run a bike train up. Or if you get 20 people, 30 people, 40 people, whatever the magic number is, we'll put a car on, a baggage car with, I think you can get the hooks at Ace Hardware, last time I checked. And we'll have this baggage car, and we'll have roll-on service on a contract basis, you know, just like you had chartered a bus. So there are plenty of opportunities for Amtrak to plow that field and get some crops growing and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the bigger issue there, Frank, and again, I go back to technology sales. So often, you know, we'd come up with a loss leader to get you to try our products, And once you see, hey, this stuff is great, you're hooked. How many people today really consider taking Amtrak for their vacation or for an excursion? And I think especially for people like cyclists who, you know, a lot of those people like an excuse not to use their car. But, you know, we fly everywhere. We don't think twice about that. We may not think twice about getting in our car and getting on the interstates. But, boy, if you could get some people to take their bikes out and go on a vacation, I bet you would change a lot of travel habits.
Well,
and you
it's true for me, champ. You hit the nail on the head for me. I started taking Amtrak again when I brought my bike.
Right.
I was inspired by – there's this couple. They blog a lot. This Path Less Pedaled couple out of Portland, Oregon. All sure. their adventures, many of them start with train travel, gets them out of the metropolis. And they came down here about a year ago and did the same thing. They trained their way into San Luis Obispo. And that's where I'm headed tomorrow. My wife and I celebrating our 39th anniversary, taking the bikes on the train, go up to San Luis Obispo, and we'll spend 6 days riding up there.
Congratulations, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and that's a real opportunity that for Amtrak to score some points with local communities as well. Look at all the business we're bringing into your community. We got these guys like Champ Burnley and his buddies. They're spending $100 and $120 a day when they're visiting you, and they came on an Amtrak train and they're leaving on an Amtrak train. You know, give us a hug.
So San Luis Obispo has got a whole program. Come without your car. The Chamber of Commerce encouraging you to get on the train and bring your bike and ride around. So anyway, it's working for San Luis Obispo.
Well, and Frank, again, just one final note on that. I mean, think about it. I talked about the Erie Canal, and we just did that in August. I was lucky enough over Labor Day, or Memorial Day rather, to do the Great Allegheny Passage CNO. Again, train service to Pittsburgh. You know, we've talked about going out and doing the Katy Trail. You know, there is some train service between St. Louis and I think Clinton on the western side of the state, but it's getting from Richmond to St. Louis that's the hassle. You know, there are a lot of great opportunities that, I mean, literally, I think we could build thousands, if not tens of thousands, of incremental business and incremental riders for Amtrak.
Yeah.
But help us do that.
I did the Erie Canal just about 2 years ago, September 15th, I did the Erie Canal 2 years ago, and I looked at train travel from California, but of course that meant boxing the bike and changing trains. It was a non-starter. It was too complicated. So I shipped my bike in advance to a bike store, and then I flew in and out, and I would have liked to have done it, you know, the slow way. I would have enjoyed it. So you're right.
There's another opportunity that Amtrak actually is pursuing but not publicizing, and I think we have an opportunity as a bike community to help them with these kinds of things. So in Portland, Maine, there's a bike rental place established right at the train station. The idea is, you know, you take the train up to Portland, you spend the day, putz around on a rental bike, do what you want, get back, dump the bike, get back on the train. You don't even have to worry about the other end of it. And yet, virtually nobody knows that this service is available.
Yeah,
so here's an opportunity.
Yeah,
yeah, and that's something again in destination cities that can easily be established. And this is an opportunity for the bike community to work with Amtrak and publicize these things and help them.
Mm-hmm. And carry along those lines, you know, there's another program I just found out about recently where Amtrak works with a National Park Service called Trails and Rails. And, you know, again, I think there's an opportunity there to promote. Again, I use the example of the CNO Canal. Boy, it would be great to be able to take your bike from D.C. out to Harper's Ferry or Cumberland or, you know, vice versa, from Chicago to or Pittsburgh down there and take advantage of some of our great national parks. And again, I really think that Amtrak has a great market opportunity to really expand their business, and I think cyclists could be an integral part of that.
Well, Kerry, your Adventure Cycling Association, I mean, it makes sense to be encouraging people to take Amtrak because it gets people closer to their adventures, right? Is that the idea?
Well, really, this is driven by our membership. Every year we do a membership survey, and I'm one of the lucky guys who gets to go through and read all the comments and categorize them and so on. It's a fun just seeing all the things that people have to say is quite entertaining because it ranges pretty broadly. But one of the consistent themes is, you know, how come I can't take my bike on Amtrak because I don't have the whole summer. I can't do a cross-country ride, so I want to do a piece of the Trans Am every year. I want to do a piece of the Pacific Coast ride every year, the Atlantic Coast ride, or the Underground Railroad, whatever it might be. And how come I can't get to a destination with a train? You know, can't you guys pull a rabbit out of a hat and make Amtrak do this? And when we get a chance, we kind of respond, well, first we have to catch the rabbit, and then we have to get a hat, and then we have to get the rabbit in the hat. And so pulling it out of the hat's the easy part. But but there is a huge amount of interest on the part of our members to integrate rail travel with long-distance bike travel. So take a train to Seattle and then ride to the other end of Montana and then take a train back home or whatever it might be.
What are you doing, Champ, in Virginia to kind of grease the skids here?
Well, I tell you, the
He's complaining. Right?
I guess I'm being a squeaky
fool. That's the first step.
the truth be known, but no, actually, I tell you, I just headed up a little effort to get a letter to the president of Amtrak. We had about 30 organizations sign on, really asking for a meeting to sit down and talk about this and see if we can come up with a reasonable solution. Looking forward to hearing back from them. But yeah, I've got to tell you, I was very pleased to have all the national organizations on board. We had most of the state organizations in the Mid-Atlantic all the way up to Maine. We had a lot of the big city organizations and even some non-rail people signed on to this. So, you know, I really think there's a lot of interest in this. And, you know, I hope Amtrak will sit down and work with me. The folks here in Virginia, Department of Rail and Public Transportation, certainly know me. And, again, I can see their pushback with limited dollars about buying brand new baggage cars. But I think if they could buy a couple of racks to put on the existing trains, they would probably spend that amount of money just to keep me quiet.
Yeah, right.
That's how it works. Good job, Champ.
Yeah.
Speaking of reasonable solutions, I would love for us, before we get off this call, to debate if a fee could ever be the right way to go. It does ease the financial situation for Amtrak, and I personally would be willing to pay a reasonable fee if I had the option of leaving my bike at the station or if I had the guarantee of access on the train. And what do you all feel about that as a solution?
Dave, I'll comment. You know, by bad analogy, you know, I actually remember when you could actually check your bags on an airplane for free, and now they want to charge you for bags and for a Coca-Cola and a bag of peanuts. You know, there are two ways to get a customer, through pain or through pleasure. And again, I think if you take the long run and say, look, if we can get incremental business and grow our customer base, you know, what does it really cost them to put the additional racks on? At least here in Virginia, the taxpayers are paying for it anyway. Yeah, you can go either way, but I think it's a smart investment on their part. Make it easy to do business with us, and guess what? We might grow our customer base and increase profitability. What a concept.
Champ, you are talking about the airlines there, and on the one hand, I'm pleased that they're making money. They obviously are, from charging for baggage and every other darn thing. But I don't see it translate into a better experience for the passenger, right? We all hate taking... That's one of the big benefits of my trip tomorrow, is I don't have to get on an airplane. And I'm not the only one who feels that way. So we're paying the money and getting little in return.
Well, but Frank, you know, and again, you've got a couple of years on me. Once upon a time, flying was glamorous and it was something you looked forward to.
Right.
And now it's a painful process. You know, it seems like a lot of American businesses, instead of trying to raise the bar, they want to see if they can lower it all the way to the ground. And again, especially for Amtrak, I really, you know, it's interesting. I'll give you another example. Buses were pretty common, I think, and a lot of people would ride those in the 40s, the 50s, and up till the 60s. Then not so much. And I know here in Richmond, we just got mega bus service about 2 years ago. I've ridden it a couple of times to go to meetings in D.C. I've got wireless. They're clean. They always seem to arrive on time. It's a pleasant experience. Again, I think Amtrak has an opportunity to differentiate, to get a choice passenger. And again, it's people like us that want to spend money. They want to slow down and they're willing, you know, they want a pleasant experience. So do you nickel and dime everybody to death?
Don't do that is what you're saying. Don't be like the airlines.
I think, you know, they can, if they charge $10, I'll probably pay it. But you know what? Entice me into wanting to go instead of just making it painful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, if you look across the country, the fee ranges from $0 to $10. So it's either $5, $10 or nothing, depending on the line, depending on the locations. So Amtrak's got to make a business proposition out of this. They got to have a value proposition. And the thing, I think the opportunity that's out there is to structure it properly. So if you're, again, back to the Surfliner situation, if you were a daily commuter and they wanted to charge you $10 each way, it would kill you. It would just kill you. But if you were just a weekender and wanted to get up out at the end of the line and go for a bike ride, you know, $20 for the weekend, that might not be too bad. So you've got to structure the fees appropriately such that the daily commuter can get, if there's going to be a fee, can get a reasonable fee, whereas maybe the one-timer, because it's a little bit like a taxi, right?
You're paying for that. And I think the solution is easy for that, and that is you sell day passes and you sell monthly passes. And
exactly.
Get a monthly pass. Do any of those agencies do that?
No, of course not. What are you talking about? So
obvious.
Right, and so that's the point. I mean, this is the opportunity to have some dialogue instead of basically running everything behind the sheet, you know, bowling behind the sheet. You just hear the noise. You don't know how many pins you knock down, that sort of thing. The chance to have some dialogue with the user community and talk about exactly that. Well, you know, give me a discount if I'm going to ride a lot. But if I'm just a one-time user, heck, $10 to ride a bike several hundred miles to get up to the C&O Canal, champ, that's not a big deal.
Oh, no, you're right, Kerry. But again, it goes back to being a smart businessman and selling the customers on this. And
exactly.
It's, again, another bad analogy is free shipping. Boy, you know, you're paying for it one way or the other, but when you see free shipping, it's enticing.
Well, oh, that's a good example, champ. I like that because I'm a sucker for that.
Oh, well, right. We all are.
Yeah.
And again, I think carry your bike for free, you're paying for it one way or the other, but boy, it sure puts a smile on your face.
Well, but from the point of view of the commuter agency, and I sit on a board that runs a ferry service and a transit service, a bus service. And we are strapped for cash. Some of our buses are overloaded, and we don't have enough money to throw another bus on the route. We also run a ferry service, and it's also overstrapped with bikes, and it's only the bike customers, frankly, who keep us in business, so we're going to love them. We treat them super nicely. But let's take the scenario where you have the choice of having one passenger with a free bike or two passengers. What are you going to do as an agency? You're going to take the two passengers. If you could entice your passenger with the bicycle to come to the station and leave their bike at the station and then grab another bike at their destination and finish their trip, that's what you'd prefer to do. And that's what they do all over Europe. They have free parking, almost free, and usually free at every single station. And they charge you as much as half the price of a regular adult fare to bring your bike on the system.
And right. So, Dave, what you're really arguing for is integrated thinking?
That's kind of, I guess, yeah. Is that weird?
Yeah.
It's kind of a bizarre concept, but it might get you someplace.
I think the bigger picture, though, guys, again, it goes back really to the business proposition. How do we entice how do we get the choice incremental rider to get on board? And again, assuming that we're making some money somewhere along the line, you know, if we can get those people along at some point, you know what, we can afford to buy an upgraded baggage car that'll carry the bikes and it's not taking space away from a person. You know, same thing. I've got a great relationship with high-speed rail people here in Virginia, and they brought up that very issue. Well, gosh, we sell out every seat on the trains on the VRE. People should come before bikes, no question about that. But again, you know, Amtrak, step back. Here's a chance to really capture a new market and grow with it. Help us help you.
All right, gentlemen. Well, we're getting to be that time here to wind things up. Before we go, would you take a moment each to, Kerry, would you mention URL at Adventure Cycling Association, how people can find out more from your group?
Yeah, it's adventurecycling.org. So Adventure Cycling, all one word, .org. Simple as that.
Simple as that. Very good. Dave?
It's calbike.org. Very simple also.
You want to plug the summit one more time, please?
Yeah, sure. November 7th through the 10th in beautiful Oakland, California. Hope you can come.
Mm-hmm. And Champ?
Come visit the VBF at vabike.org. And while I have you, Frank, got to put in a big plug to all of your listeners. Come to Richmond in September of 2015. We're going to have the World UCI Cycling Championships. We're expecting about 500,000 people from around the world to visit. So mark that on your calendar now. We'd love to have you in Richmond for the week of racing.
Oh, that sounds exciting, Champ. Well, gentlemen, three new guests on my show. Thanks for taking the time and getting connected on Skype to join me this morning. Thanks very much. And
Frank, what a pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Indeed.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're back in the studio. Before we say goodbye, I'd like to invite you to come by the website. It's cdmcyclist.com. CDM, of course, is a little abbreviation for my neighborhood, Corona del Mar. It's a little part of Newport Beach, California, where we're working away, working very diligently, have the support of our city council, the police department, basically everybody in local government to improve cycling safety on our city streets. Would you come by the website? Leave a comment behind, Champ, Carrie, Dave. I'd like to hear your point of view on this subject. And while you're on the site, I have other interviews, and they're all just a button push away. Many other leading bicycle advocates across the country, across the world, available for you to listen to for free. While you're on the site, hit that PayPal donate button. It'd be greatly appreciated. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks so much for listening, and good day.